Are you ready to take your podcast journey to the next level? Then you're going to want to check out On Air Fest 2025, the premier festival for sound and storytelling. On Air Fest 2025 is where multimedia creators gather to elevate their craft while celebrating their community. Taking place in Brooklyn, February 19th through the 21st, On Air Fest 2025 features 3 days and four nights of live podcasts, performances, and parties. And this year's lineup is bigger than ever, featuring tech queen Taylor Lorenz, SNL's James Austin Johnson, Death, Sex, and Money's Anna Sale, and over 200 creators and storytellers. And because Advertising Week is a media partner of On Air Fest 2025, and you're part of our crew, we invite you to use our code AW10 for 10% off your pass. Get your tickets now at on-air-fest.com, and be sure to use code AW10 to save. That's on-air-fest.com with code AW10. We'll see you there. You're listening to AW360, a podcast from Advertising Week. Recorded in studio and live at Advertising Week's global events, AW360 features thought leadership conversations with the best and the brightest in the advertising, marketing, and technologies industries each and every week. If you enjoy AW360, we'd appreciate it if you took the time to subscribe on your podcast platform of choice and maybe even leave a positive review. Thanks for listening. In this episode of AW360, we sit down with Lisa Nichols, Executive Creative Director at TBWA MCR, to explore the ever-evolving world of advertising creativity. From leading a diverse creative team to fostering innovation across brands as varied as Legoland, jewelry, and pizza, Lisa shares her insights on disruption, leadership, and balancing creativity with strategic thinking. Plus, Lisa shares her candid thoughts on AI's role in the creative process, where it helps and where it falls flat. Lisa, welcome to AW360. I'm so pleased to have you on today.
Thank you so much, Richard. Lovely to be here.
You're creative director at TBWA MCR. That's a lot of letters. Can you please go through the letters and then tell us the role of creative director, let alone executive creative director, has changed a lot over the years. Tell us what that role entails for you in 2025.
Okay, so TBWA MCR. To explain the letters, it was many more letters prior to this. It was Manchester. We are an affiliate, obviously, within the TBWA group, and MCR stands for Manchester, which is the best city in the UK, I would say that, being from Manchester. And we are, again, part of the TBWA Global Collective. We work on our own clients across the P, so none that are connected with TBWA. We work a lot on Merlin Entertainment Groups, which is all theme parks and visitor attractions, which is a hell of a lot of fun. We've got parks in Gardaland in Italy and in Germany, all over the place. Legoland resorts across the globe as well. Pizza brands, jewelry brands. We work with charities. So we've got a pretty broad spectrum of clients and brands, which me and my team are really responsible for creating the best disruptive work we can for those brands across the piece. So I head up a creative team or a creative department really of around 20 people, which covers the whole range of creative teams, art directors, copywriters, designers. We've got a specific design department, and then content makers and producers. We have our own in-house content arm called Sting. So I'm kind of responsible with an art director partner as well, because we work as a team, for the creative output of the agency and keeping it up to the highest standards that we can and that we'd like to see coming out.
The word broad is a bit of an understatement, given just the sheer amount of different things you just covered there. You know, when you think of everything from pizza to, I think you said jewelry?
Yeah.
To Lego.
Yeah.
The creative disciplines and just the creativity that would be involved in each of those. How do you go about ensuring that your creatives are creative in all those different areas? That's a lot of different areas to play in.
Yeah.
We take, well, for the most part, obviously we apply our, it's a TBWA philosophy of disruption. So that's first and foremost our first sort of lens that we put across everything, right? From the strategic thinking at the start through to the creative brief, through to the work that we see from the creative teams in the first round of creative iterations. So there's that, which kind of brings everything into one kind of line. And then there's also the idea that it's, let's talk consumer first because we're talking to people. So put those people very much at the forefront of our minds when we're creating and building strategies and creative work, and make sure that they are very much the core, the heart of everything that we do. So there's kind of a set of parameters around it, as broad as it is. And I understand that, you know, they are very different brands and very different things. But if you keep the simplicity of that thought and the simplicity of those two things in your mind as you're creatively thinking, then it kind of pulls you in line a little bit. I think most creatives, particularly the ones, you know, I've had the privilege to work with across the years, love playing with all kinds of different brands and all the different aspects of creativity that they can bring to bear. And I think when you do sit a team always on one piece of work, it can become a little tiny bit in a rut, a bit stale from what I've seen. So I like to mix things up. My creatives like to mix things up. So it's just good to have that spread. And I think our clients benefit from that broad spread as well, because things get approached at from different angles, from different teams. So it's good like that.
Let's dive in a little bit to the leadership side of what you do. I mean, how do you go about supporting these creatives through their creative process?
Having this understanding that the world has shifted and moved on. As I've gone through those years, things have changed a heck of a lot, particularly in the, you know, post-pandemic years, you know, with Gen Z and all that kind of stuff coming in. I've had to change the way I manage teams, the way I manage myself to help them, to support them. So we've seen that shift as I've gone through being a creative director. And it's just really keeping the door open to different ways of creating and not always thinking, this is how I want to see it. This is how I would do it. How would you do it? What's the life experience that you're going to bring to this creative brief? What's your thoughts on this rather than what I want to see? I have a clear view of how I'd like what the answer could be, but I'm always very happy to see and hear something that's completely different to what I've got in my head. I love to be surprised by creatives when they come in with a deck of work and there's just a little tiny bit of a scribble maybe on the corner somewhere, and you like go, oh, that, just that set of words there. Didn't expect that to come out. Go and see where that can go, rather than the sort of first round of stuff. It's just, I love seeing all kinds of different creative answers and not thinking that I've got the answer in my head, because, you know, I've got a 53-year-old head and what do I know? 53, it could be different, you know?
I hear that. One of the things that I've always found interesting about creatives in our industry in particular is that we have a pretty wide and varied number of personalities. And among them, many are highly introverted people.
Yeah.
How do you make sure that you're hearing the introverts' voices when it comes to, you know, the creativity and the ideas and getting those out there and making sure their voices are heard?
I can speak from actual personal experience on this. There's like a midpoint in my career where just promoted to creative director at TBWA, and chief creative officer down in London, Peter Suter, said, hi guys, I think you could do with some coaching on this point because you're obviously new to it. Please speak to this lady called Alison Chadwick. And she introduced me and my partner to the idea of extroverts and introverts. And there was a massive penny drop moment for me when I found out I indexed very heavily on the introvert side of everything. I thought, oh, that's why I react like this in this situation. That's why I sit at the back of the room. That's why I listen. That's why I'll only speak up after I've taken everything. So there was a huge penny drop for me. So when this conversation, and it's, you know, relatively recent, around introverts and extroverts started to sort of rear up, I thought, I can help people who are like me get their thoughts out, their creative ideas out, help them speak, advocate for them as a creative director, as an introvert. I just thought it was great just to be able to go, do you know what? I'm going to sit back and let you talk. You talk, You talk me through your ideas. You talk me through why your approach is how it is. And then I will steer and guide, but it will be from a position over here rather than talking at you. So ears open all the time. Listen, always listen. And when in a creative team, there's someone who doesn't talk a lot, say, and what are your thoughts on that? How do you feel about this? How would you describe X, Y, and Z? And tease them out, you know, get them to talk, get them to feel that you are, this is a safe space. This is a safe space for you to talk about your creative thoughts and your creative process, and no judgments here. And do the same thing in a wider format. If you're in a meeting, you know, and there were a few creators talking about ideas, or you're presenting to a client and you see there's a client in the room who's a bit quiet, you know, they might be uncomfortable. So the exact same process really there is just to say, oh, I noticed, Jane, you were nodding along there, but I just wondered what your thoughts were on this. And just very, you know, gently and not aggressively ask the question and just tease things out of people. And just watch how they behave, I think, in a room and in a space, because a lot, you can read a lot from people's sort of expressions and where they're nodding and where they're not and where they're sitting back and where they're leaning in, all that kind of stuff. It's just your antennae has to be on for all of that when there are introverts in the room, because they speak a lot without speaking. So yeah, it's gaining that and understanding that as you go through the process, I think.
All the complex things that you have to be aware of as a leader today.
Layered in, yeah.
You know, speaking of, what are the challenges that you still see in the modern workplace as a female leader in our industry?
Sometimes actually this idea of, not that all women are introverts, but the same tools you have to use to tease things out of introverts can play through very much in terms of women in the room being listened to and space made for. I think there are sort of parallels within that. So it's same sort of process, really. I think that it's very easy. You know, when I started in advertising a while ago, it was very male dominated, but I did have female leaders, not in the creative space, but certainly in, you know, strategic and account handling spaces, where there were female leaders who did things their way, not necessarily in a way that was a woman behaving in a male way, but in their own way. So I had great role models in that respect. I was very, very lucky to have those people. So what I try to do is just be me, lead my way, and not try and be something else. I'm naturally not very good. I'm not a girly girl, so that's just me naturally. But I try and just, you know, be myself within a meeting, talk how I would naturally talk, not try and put across, you know, a lot of sort of client jargon or any of that kind of stuff, and let the creatives see that that is fine, that is okay. Particularly the female creatives. And I've had female creatives say to me, God, it's great to see you in a meeting, just being you. And I'm like, I can't do it any other way. I've got no, there's no like acting skills here. It's just who I am. But they've come up and they've said that it was great to see that in a meeting. And they felt out of the back of that, that's permission. I don't like to use that word, but permission just to be in themselves in that space. And in doing that, I think you get more creative freedom. If you relax into your role and into your space and you're female, then you are immediately more open to being more creative, and everybody benefits from that. So the more authentic we can be, the more, you are just authentic, but, you know, the more that's encouraged, the more creative people will be, and the more creative women will be and females will be in the teams.
And do you feel that work, specifically creative work, is judged differently, perhaps not at, you know, TBWA, but just in general, you know, across the industry? Do you feel that work is judged differently between males and females when we know who created what?
I think it can't help but be, just with all the unconscious biases that you hear of, and sometimes aren't that unconscious, actually. Even now, I think that they are judged differently, but it's about everybody, not just women, not just guys, everybody understanding that those biases, putting the hands up to them, being very honest about it and saying, I think this and I think that. I need to park that thought. You've got to make a mindful, conscious effort to park that sort of stuff. And I think we're only just seeing the beginning of that, because I still think it happens to this day. You know, day to day it happens. I do it in different places, and I have to make sure that before I go into a meeting or before I do anything, that I'm going, this is how I'm going to, what I'm going to bring to this meeting is this. I'm going to leave that at the door. I think that when we get to judging creative work and who's done it, whether it's female or male, needs to be considered in that way, really.
Let's shift over to what I like to think of as the big elephant in the room for the past year or two, artificial intelligence, and how impacted creativity. What are your feelings on AI, and specifically as it relates to its impact on, let's start with, are you using it at all?
We use AI in terms of creating visuals and things like that creatively in our workplace. We don't use it commercially because of all the trademark and copyright issues inherent within it. And it's great. It gets you to a really good visual place in terms of putting an idea in front of a client very quickly. What it doesn't do is allow for that quirk of humanity, I would call it, that plays in, I think, with creativity. And it's that, again, this is going to sound a bit deep and everything, but that human experience that only we can bring to the creative process is not there with AI. I can't speak to us whether it will be, because I'm not any kind of AI intellect or anything like that. But we do use it. We use it sparingly, and we use it as a tool, not as a creative end result, if you see what I mean.
Yeah. It feels like everybody was afraid of it there for a few months. And then as we kind of went along, that fear kind of subsided a little bit, and we kind of found a way to use it. I've noticed that, you know, when I prompt it to make pictures and things like that, it tends to make things that look very samey over time, and it doesn't feel evolved a whole lot. So I've since become very bored. I mean, once you've made the donut with a top hat on it a few times, a donut with a top hat, and then, you know, Apple got it in their commercial, and you're like, oh, okay, great. If that sells phones, that's awesome. But at the end of the day, it's still a donut with a top hat. When you're looking ahead, what are some things about the industry, and, you know, it could be any period of time you want. You know, this is the last question. I like to end on kind of a crystal ball sort of a question. What are some things in the road ahead in our industry that you think present either really great opportunities or that, you know, you find might be very exciting from a creative perspective?
Gosh, that's a very big question. I'm really interested in how the industry can balance out the ever-pressing equation of sustainability, and how obviously our industry is very much focused on this idea of consume. How do we use our considerable skill sets and talents to flip that in a way that helps rather than adds to or hinders the problem? And it is a problem. So I think that's a question, and I think it's one we can help answer as much as we've sort of had added to it. So that's kind of something that has been pricking my conscience, you know, in the deep hours of the night. How do we as an industry hold our hands up to some of this and then try to flip it around? And I know there's been a lot of purpose-driven work, very much the stuff that gets, you know, awarded at Cannes and in the big sort of award ceremonies and things like that. But it's just, what do we do meaningfully on a scale, on a level that means we can flip the narrative of that and change things? So as an industry, not just our agency, but as an industry, can we start to do that in a much more meaningful and real and authentic way? So yeah, that. Massive topic. Yeah.
Massive answer.
Just that one. Just a little thing.
Massive undertaking. Well, yeah. Lisa, this has been incredibly enjoyable. I thank you so much for taking the time to be on the show today.
No problem. It was absolutely lovely to speak to you.
Thanks for listening to AW360. For more podcasts like this one, be sure to check out Advertising Week's ever-growing roster of podcasts for the advertising, marketing, and technology industries, including our flagship podcast, Great Minds. You can find those at www.advertisingweek.com/podcasts.